Hello, Susanna Lopez here, actor turned barrister turned broadcaster turned true crime writer and proud member of Sisters in Crime Australia. Welcome to the Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. For over 30 years now, Sisters in Crime Australia has supported our women crime writers, both true crime and fiction, and some criminal literary talent has been unearthed. Among many awards, there's an annual prize for short crime fiction, the Scarlet Stiletto Awards. And for those of you who prefer your stories by ear, in 2023 we commenced this podcast series, Scarlet Stiletto Bites, to celebrate the sisters' 30th anniversary. Each story is short, but not always sweet. Expect twisted tales, quirky humour, and a frisson of feminism. Please support us by following, sharing, reviewing, and generally spreading the word. We have no paywall. They say revenge is a dish best served cold, but perhaps it's better if it's at least fresh. Today's story is Revenge is Never the Answer by Sarah Robinson Hatch, who was joint winner of the Young Writers Award at the 2011 Scarlet Stilettos. I slumped at my desk, glumly staring at the crackled white paint peeling away from it. "Oi, Billy, get your hands off my lovely white spotted skirt. It may not be new, but it's the only one I've got and I'm very fond of it," I yelled, slapping my hands on the desk. The child moved away and I slumped back into my chair, exhausted. Fridays. It was one of those days where I just couldn't wait to get back to my warm, cosy home, heat up the leftover pizza from last night's dinner, before snuggling up on the couch with my doona to watch soap opera after soap opera until I fell asleep, cold and alone. Being stuck in a classroom with 28 prep children did not give me the excitement that I had hoped for. Every teacher enters the profession with the hope to make a difference to every child's life by teaching them not only how to read and write, but that school is a place of learning skills that you will carry with you for the rest of your life. Instead, the class was full of loud kids who never listened to anything I said. The kids always wanted to go to the toilet, and the place smelled of wet jumpers, old sandwiches, and clag glue. Every afternoon for the past 4 years, I've been dreaming about the day I will resign to escape to a tropical paradise. But seriously, as if that's ever going to happen. I walked over to the window, ducking under all the colourful artwork that the children had painted, which were hanging on ropes that wove across the classroom. The trees bent over in the gale-force wind, their leaves touching their roots like a floppy ballerina or a sad clown. Into my line of view came the principal of the school with a woman. I began to panic. The principal was staring into my classroom, saying something to the woman. The woman lifted her eyebrows in shock and her mouth dropped. Oh, what if they were talking about how I never have control of my class and just let my students run riot? I swear if I left the classroom for a minute, the children would be painting all over the walls and swinging from the fan on the ceiling. "Everybody, calm down," I whispered, but my voice couldn't be heard over the loud yelling and squealing. The principal and the woman walked towards my classroom. I ran into the middle of the room. "Everybody be quiet," I screamed. The classroom fell silent and the door slowly creaked open. I walked quickly over to the door to let the principal in. "Yes?" I asked. I could see the woman's face more clearly now. Please, no, it can't be her. Oh, God, no. But God wasn't listening. As the woman walked into the classroom, I slowly walked backwards, because there, right in front of me, stood her, my arch enemy from high school, Brittany. I just couldn't believe my eyes. It was the girl who made my life a living hell. Even though she now wore a suit, probably made by Chanel or Gucci, and had professionally done makeup and hair, she was still the same girl who had ruined my life. Her designer clothes made me look like I was dressed in a paper bag. My white spotted skirt and hippie shirt that came from a recycled clothes shop were no match for Brittany's polished fingernails and scarlet stilettos. I was completely confused to see Brittany at my school. So many thoughts were going through my head, but I couldn't seem to say any of them aloud. "Hello, Naomi, how nice to see you," Brittany said pleasantly, as if she hadn't ruined my life. I just couldn't believe it. I was absolutely speechless. "Oh, don't you remember me?" Brittany asked with surprise in her voice. I groaned, folding my arms. Oh, God, kill me now. "Is that a no? Oh, my name is Brittany Jones. We went to high school together," Brittany laughed. Then she swept into the centre of the classroom and turned to the children with a smile. "Hello, kids. My name is Brittany." Confidence was still the highlight of Brittany's personality. "Hi, Brittany," the class replied enthusiastically with grins on their faces. The children stopped what they were doing and sat down on the floor in front of her. I gasped. Why hadn't the kids ever listened to me that way? Brittany has just done what I've never been able to do in my 4 long years of teaching. Have every child's attention. The principal formally walked towards us. "Naomi, I'd like you to meet Brittany Jones. Brittany is our school's first ever writer in residence. We're very lucky to have received government funding this year. Brittany has written 11 crime novels and is currently working on another. I've read them all myself, and might I say, Brittany, they were amazing. You create such brilliant stories that grab the reader's attention so well. The plots were fantastic too," the principal stated enthusiastically, now talking to Brittany. I was absolutely furious. First, Brittany takes control of the class in the few minutes that she's been here, and secondly, Brittany is a successful writer who will be working at my school. All the preps suddenly started chanting, "Brittany, Brittany, Brittany." Nobody acknowledged my existence. I reckon that if I had a heart attack right now, no one would even notice, let alone care. The principal cleared his throat noisily, which snapped me out of my daydreaming. Yes, I asked. "Can you take Brittany to the staff lounge for some complimentary lunch?" Well, just then the bell rang, so I sent the preps out and then led Brittany out of the room. "Actually, Naomi, I'd like to use a computer. I have to send my new crime novel to the publisher's company. The deadline is today, and I didn't have time to email it this morning," said Brittany. I sighed and then led her to the empty, silent staff lounge, which housed desktop computers along all 4 of the cream-coloured walls. Brittany swept into the room and took a seat on a chair beside a computer, flicking her long, blonde, wavy hair over her shoulders. Just being with Brittany brought back painful memories from my high school life, which made me feel untalented and ugly again. I wish I could get her back for everything she's ever done to me. I wasn't brave enough to stand up to Brittany in high school, but not anymore. When Brittany leaves the staff lounge, I could offer to take her bag to the car, but steal her mobile phone out of it. I smirked. No, that's a childish thing to do, I thought. I should play along and pretend to be friends because we went to high school together. And really, I don't have a real reason to be disrespectful to her now, just because she was mean to me in high school. Suddenly, in the quiet of the staff room, came a screech of some opera singer in full flight. Brittany pulled out her phone and answered it. Who has opera singing as their ringtone? I hate opera singing. Hi, this is Brittany, asked Brittany cheerfully, but then her smile faded away. Yes, I am his daughter. What? A stroke? Is he all right? I'm on my way. The colour left Brittany's cheeks. Leaving the computer on, she rushed out of the room. I saw Brittany's memory stick still in the computer. Oh, Brittany, you forgot your... Oh, never mind, I called after her. I looked around her. There was nobody else in the staff room. I walked over to Brittany's computer and quickly pulled out her memory stick and slipped it into my pocket. I walked casually back to my classroom and sat at my cluttered desk. I sat there for a few minutes, staring at Brittany's memory stick. I tried to resist the urge to have a look at what was on it, but it was useless. Without thinking, I opened my laptop and inserted the memory stick to have a look at all of Brittany's files. Oh, look what we have here. All of her qualifications for teaching, emails from her sisters and mother, letters to her editors and publishers. It looks like, here's her book. I looked over my shoulder, checking there was nobody behind me. I could only hear the children laughing and squealing from the playground. I opened her book on the memory stick. I clicked print on the computer, and above the loud children in the distance, I heard the whine of the old dusty printer that echoed all the way through the hallway and into my classroom. I noisily pushed out my chair and walked down to the printer, which was happily spitting out the many pages to Brittany's book. When the printer suddenly cut off, I took the pages back to my classroom and put them onto my desk, staring at the tiny printed words. I grabbed the pages and shoved them into my big handbag. Driving home that afternoon, my old red sedan rattled its way down the steep hill towards my house. Normally, I was so bored of doing the same old thing every night, yet tonight, I was actually looking forward to the familiarity of that boredom. I drove into the cracked concrete driveway and peered at my dilapidated old house. As I turned off the chugging engine, I leaned over to the passenger seat to pick up my heavy bag. I struggled out of the car and slammed the door behind me. I made my way to the front door of my 1980s-style house with dirty striped window shades. The brick walls of my home were dull and uninviting to visitors. Even I agreed that this house was ugly, but I had no choice. If I had the money to get out of this smelly old rental, I'd be gone in a flash. I made myself a nice hot tea, pulled out Brittany's crime novel and started to read it from the very beginning, sipping at my tea while I read. I was determined to read Brittany's entire book tonight, itching to know why everybody thought she was so talented. I kicked off my dark brown short boots and curled up on the couch, wrapping the blanket that was on the end of the couch from last night's soap opera marathon around me. I must have dozed off for a while because when I jolted awake, it was dark outside and my feet were cold. Ah, yes, Brittany's book. Leafing through it, I soon found the antagonist was called Charlotte and the protagonist was called Ruby. Charlotte is out to get Ruby because she wanted revenge for her father's sake on Ruby's father, but he was no longer alive. I kept on reading. The storyline was very similar to my life, my father's life. It was exactly like what happened between my dad and Brittany's father 30-odd years ago. My father was also bullied at high school. Ever since he had left the school where he had been bullied, he'd been out to get revenge on Brittany's father, Andrew. Dad thought it would be over when Andrew died, which I think was from a stroke, but it wasn't over for me. Brittany had also ruined my life in high school, and I wasn't going to let her get away with it. Not another generation was going to be bullied in high school the way I was. Eventually, I finished reading the story. Charlotte kills Ruby by cutting the brake lines in Ruby's car, so when Ruby is driving to work the next day, she goes off the side of a cliff and falls 500 metres into a river. Charlotte gets away with the murder. Ooh, now that's the way to kill someone, I thought, impressed with what Brittany had thought up. But how should I get rid of Brittany? I'd also have to hope that I could get away with her murder, just as Charlotte did in Brittany's book. But hold on, I've read Brittany's crime novel. I could take my inspiration from there. Not only would that satisfy my revenge, but also it would let her experience the full onslaught of her own imagination. There was only one problem with my brilliant act of revenge. How would I know what to do to make the brakes fail on a car? If I went to a car shop and asked them, "How do you make the brakes fail in a car?" they would all be very suspicious and report me to the police. I groaned, slumping back into the couch. Who knew that planning to kill someone was such hard work? But the answer to my dilemma was staring me in the face. I sat up, yawned, and walked back over to my big brown work bag and got out my laptop computer. I trudged back to the couch and opened my laptop. I clicked onto Google. "How to make brakes fail in a car," I mumbled as I clumsily banged the letters on the keyboard. I clicked onto the first website that came up and I skimmed over the web page. Cut brake line. They run from wheel to wheel diagonally, usually dark green or black painted tubes, I whispered to myself. Actually, this didn't seem too hard. All I needed was some garden shears, pliers, some gardening gloves, and a pretty colourful feathered party mask to disguise myself. This was going to be too easy. But it only seems right that I should frighten Brittany to the core via emails before I kill her. There were saved emails on her memory stick, which would have her email address on it. If I'm going to kill Brittany, it has to be done properly. I wandered back over to the kitchen and put Brittany's papers on the bench. I'm too exhausted to begin any detailed plan of my murder tonight, so I stomped down the hallway and into my bedroom. I lay on my bed, willing myself to sleep. It was impossible, though, trying to get to sleep. I couldn't help but wonder what tomorrow would bring. All I knew was that I was going to scare Brittany through her emails and tell her that she's at death's door, and then in the early hours of Sunday morning, I would cut her brake lines in her car. Excited by my mischievous plan, I decided that I would find out where Brittany lived now. I leant over to my wooden bedside table and opened the glass door to the small cabinet under it. I reached in and pulled out the white pages. Brittany Jones. Jones. I skimmed through all of the people in the metropolitan area with the surname Jones. In some minutes, I found Brittany's address. I jumped out of bed and walked happily to the kitchen with the white pages open in my hands. I placed the Mountainette's volume on the bench and grabbed a piece of screwed-up paper from the mountain of mess. I flipped it over and wrote down the address, 23 Moomba Parade, Black Point. I looked down at the address, pleased with myself. But I wasn't utterly convinced that I should kill somebody for family pride. It would not be family pride because my family would disown me if I did something that terrible. There was a little voice in the back of my head telling me that Brittany's father had already died. That makes it equal. But I dismissed the thought from my head, refusing to let it go. I wandered back to my bedroom and hopped into my bed, pulling the covers over my head. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to show Brittany what it feels like to be insulted, abused, and terrified out of your wits. Brittany had done that to me so many times that it was time to give her a taste of her own medicine. I closed my eyes and smiled. Ah, this was going to be quite enjoyable. I must have dropped off to sleep because when I next opened my eyes, the bright sunlight streamed through my curtains. I rubbed the sleep out of my eyes and sat up in bed. I looked at my watch. 8:30. I groaned and pulled up the covers over my head again before I could remember what I was going to do today. I jumped out of bed and skipped down the hallway and past the kitchen, picking up Brittany's address on the scrap of paper before continuing on to the living room. My computer sat on the couch, and I remembered that Brittany had saved emails on her memory stick. I walked back over to my big brown bag and got it out. I went back over to my computer that waited patiently on the couch for me. I inserted the memory stick and opened the emails that were saved there. I jotted down Brittany's email address next to her address. Right then, let's see, I mumbled, making a new email to Brittany. Brittany Jones, you will die tomorrow. You're at death's door, and death doesn't tend to be very kind to bullies, I typed, frantically clicking the keys on the computer before pressing send. No, I know I'm not very good at this whole scaring Brittany to the core scheme. Maybe I should just cut to the part of killing Brittany now. Late tonight, I will do the honour of cutting Brittany's brake lines so that when she goes out in the morning for breakfast or whatever she would do on a Sunday morning, she crashes into something and dies. The only hard thing that I'll be doing today is waiting another 15 hours before I get my perverse pleasure. Later that night, I drove slowly and silently over to Brittany's house and parked my car a few houses away. I got out of my car and opened the door to the back seat and grabbed my big black backpack full of equipment. I also grabbed my torch that was lying next to my pack, ready for me to use. House number 23. Here it is, I whispered to myself. Could this be the right house, really? Brittany must live in a mansion. Well, I wouldn't expect anything less than that. Her family is very rich. Oh, my God, look at her car. Her car was a sleek red convertible. seemed like a crime to make it crash. Oh, wait. It was. I'm so close, I can't pull out now. I strode over to her beautiful car and just stared at it for a few minutes before lying down and scooting myself underneath it with my pack in my hands. I quietly unzipped my backpacker and grabbed out my hedge trimmers. These were the closest that I had to proper clippers for cutting metal, but they should do the job. I turned on my torch to see if I could see the dark green or black tubes running diagonal underneath the car. Yep, there they are. I closed my eyes and gripped my hedge trimmers, which were open, and pressed up against the lines. Then suddenly I clamped down on the line and cut straight through it with a loud snap. Oh, I really hope nobody wakes up. I'd better make this quick, then leave. I moved my hedge trimmers over to the next brake line and cut through it with another satisfying snap. Good. Now get out of here. I put my hedge clippers and torch back into my bag and scooted back out from under the car. Ouch! I whispered as I hit my head on the back of the car. I stood up, rubbing my head. I tiptoed back to my car, taking one last look at Brittany's house. Quietly opened my door, threw my bag onto the passenger seat and slowly drove back home. I rubbed my eyes and sighed. Oh, thank goodness that part was over. Now I can only look forward to tomorrow morning when Brittany leaves her house in her car. I'll have to come back to Brittany's home in about 7 hours so that I can see how my plan turned out. I pulled into my driveway and walked to the front door, leaving my bag in my car until tomorrow morning. I reached into my pocket and pulled out my house keys, fumbling to get it into the keyhole. Oh, my hands were shaking from the cold. Eventually, I got the stubborn door to open. I didn't even bother to put on my pyjamas. I'd just be getting dressed in another 6 hours or so. I climbed into my cold bed, curled up and tried to get some sleep. When I woke up, it was barely light outside. I checked my watch. It was 7 o'clock. I groaned, pushing myself out of bed. I was so tired from staying up late last night. I picked up my keys and slammed the door behind me. The air outside was cold, but it had a lovely fresh smell of dew on the grass and eucalyptus in the air. I trudged over to my car and fired the engine, backed out of my driveway and drove over to Brittany's place. And I was just in time too, because when I parked a few houses away from Brittany's house, Brittany was just strutting over to her car. Oh no! I could see a neighbour coming out of their house in their pyjamas and walking out to their letterbox. A witness. I started to panic now, but I couldn't do anything about it. Brittany waved over the road to the neighbour before getting into her car in her tall leather boots and fur jacket. The engine rumbled to life and Brittany backed out of her driveway slowly. I could feel my heart almost jumping out of my chest with anxiety. My breathing quickened as Brittany got further out onto the road and suddenly, bang! Brittany's car backed into a tree on the side of the road. I heard Brittany yelling something in frustration as she turned around to see what had happened to her expensive toy. I heard a high-pitched scream from the neighbour before she ran over to Brittany's battered car. The airbag suddenly deployed from the centre of the steering wheel. A bit late. Brittany opened her door, climbed out and slammed it shut noisily. My God, Brittany's going to see my car and call the police. I panicked, needing to get away from the scene. I drove past Brittany's car, only getting a quick glimpse of the damage I'd caused. Oh, nothing too serious. No, not serious enough. Just a big expensive dent in the boot. Oh no, they've seen me. I whispered to myself as Brittany and her neighbour glared at my car as I drove away. I sped home and exited quickly, barely noticing the cracks in my old driveway. Oh my God, I've just tried to kill somebody. I've attempted murder. What have I done? What will I do? I can't stay here. I've got to go away. Far away. I ran to the door and unlocked it. I ran inside and into my room. For all I know, the police could turn up at my doorstep any minute. With some quick packing and some even speedier driving, I was at the airport in less than 20 minutes. Once there, I ran up to a member of staff who was checking people onto their flights. If I'm looking for some tropical paradise to retire to, why not go there just a little sooner than expected? Excuse me, could you please check me in for a flight to some tropical island? I just need to escape to the sunshine, so please be quick, I pleaded. I looked around. I couldn't see any police with the huge crowd. Passport, please, the staff member asked blankly, staring into space. I got out my passport from my handbag and handed it to her. Ah, I'm sorry, this passport is invalid, the staff member said after she had scanned it. She looked over my shoulder and nodded to somebody behind me. I turned around, and the police were right behind me. I gasped, my eyes opened wide. I knew revenge was never the answer. Well, not this time anyway. The end. Thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback, and we'd love to reach more listeners. Our website is sistersincrime.org.au and our email address is admin@sistersincrime.org.au. Until next Friday then, when we bring you another scintillating story from Australian women crime creators.